Part 5. Bears Repeating.
Chapter 21. Jimmy. Sugar's gone by the time we arrive. It's just Marmalade stood there, shuffling awkwardly. You get to know bears after you work with them long enough. Bears have got their own body language. Marmalade's real unhappy, but not in the angry, dangerous way bears get. She's just miserable, scared to do anything, like anything she does might make matters worse. I never heard her speak before. Most bears, you hear them, they get some kind of human voice. Outdoors, they radio you, sub-voke. Indoors, past the airlocks, where the atmosphere's dense enough to carry the sounds, we just talk. Talking's more natural to us people, and the bioforms keep direct channel comms to between themselves. So Marmalade never had anything to say, and when we meet up, I find out why. Her voice isn't something nice you'd use for after-dinner conversation or sweet nothings. It's got subsonics in there that fair make me wet myself just to hear her. I am suddenly so very glad I never got far enough on Sugar's bad side that she sent her friends to have a word with me. She got this smile, Marmalade growls at me, and her voice makes out it's my fault even when she's not trying. Big smile, like she never had before. Then, it was like I didn't exist. She went out. I tried to get in her way. She shouted at me, said things. Not complimentary things, I'm guessing. Not things Sugar ever said before. And I don't know how it was between Sugar and her hench bears when they were alone. Part of me, that would have been most of me not so long ago, reckons she shouted at them and beat them and maybe had some headwear hack to keep them in line, because she's one small human woman and they're a couple of goddamn enormous bears. But the rest of me, the most of me as of now, finds it doesn't believe that. When murder went down, that was a personal, not just a professional, loss to Sugar. And now Sugar's gone AWOL with a weird-ass smile on her face. And on my way back, Honey and I saw plenty of that. Like every second face we ran into was beaming at us, hand out to shake like it was National Glad-Handing Day. I clue Marmalade in that whatever's going on, Sugar's the least of it. She won't stay still, wants to find something she can lay into that's responsible. I'd love to oblige her, just so that something doesn't end up being me. But I got a dreadful, crawling feeling that whatever's going on here ain't going to yield to tooth and claw. I got a dreadful feeling Honey knows more than she's saying about it, too. And given how fond she is of her own voice, that ain't exactly reassuring. What's doing? I ask her. Come on now. I'm trying to assess the network traffic. That seems to be key to the situation. But a proper analysis is proving unexpectedly difficult. Simply put, there's not much room for me to get about in the system. Digital rush hour in Hell City, Jimmy. She says, I start, but Marmalade got cut in on the channel, because I guessed Honey's not going to just absent-mindedly assume a bear isn't worth including like a human might. We need to get a better vantage, she decides. Meaning what? Demand I. You want to go climb a mountain so you can look down on your armies or something? Meaning, she says, with enough of an edge that I reckon Dr. Bear's patience is wearing thin, that this hole we're in has lousy connectivity, and I need you to take your two legs and get me closer to the center of the city, closer to admin, so I can gather data. I am also going to say, and you should in no ways take this as a threat, that I can take those legs off you and walk you all the way there myself, if I have to. But that would take a lot of concentration on my part, and so I'd rather not. I thought you said that was against your goddamn ideology. I thought you were freedom bear. Jimmy, I've only recently had to come to terms with my own death. Let's just say that I'm not having a good day, Honey tells me sharply. Let's go, Marmalade rumbles. Sugar's gone over to someone else. This place is blown anyway. We'll get her back, I say. I even put a hand on the rough hair of her arm. It's a mistake at first, I think. Don't be familiar with this savage criminal animal. Except she sags a bit, and nothing sags quite like a bear, where their skin and its contents always have this shifting relationship. Big, tall, strong one minute, pooling puddle of fat the next. She sags, and she nods, and apparently I did the right thing for once. We go out, the two, three, kind of us. I stay in Marmalade's shadow, and she's ready not to take shit from anyone. Except right then, nobody's handing it out. For about half the people we see, more than half, it's almost like they're doing a play, and we got backstage. They're going about shaking hands with each other, with those freaky smiles. And each time we see them make the clasp, someone ends up nodding. Not agreement nodding, but something lower. Someone giving way. One head's definitely higher than the other when they part. Honey says something about tugging forelocks, which apparently isn't a sex thing. But you see what's going on here, Jimmy. You remember what I told you. Impatient teacher with slow pupil. Except, yes, this time yours truly passes with flying colors, because actually I do. It's your prisoners, doofus, I say. It's the thing where they rigged it, where they cheated. Well, it wasn't cheating per se, she starts, in full teach mode, before reining herself in. Yes, exactly that. We're seeing a hierarchy being established. Why not buy headwear? Marmalade rumbles when she's been clued in. I can barely get to you on a narrow comms channel right now. There's so much system traffic, Honey says. So this is their alternative system. There must be recognition codes in the handshake established where each unit sits in the hole. And then we're a district out from admin, close enough for her to get a real good picture of what's going on if the system will only give her room to get her claws in and open it up. Jimmy! It's been a while since anyone shouted my name out loud. Only Muldoon. What with Sugar jimblesing me all the time. I see someone shoving their way past a knot of glad-handing grinners. Indra, my old fellow penitent on the shit job rota, lover of soaps. Except she's scared out of her wits right now, practically throwing her arms round me when she sees I'm not just gonna pump her mitt like some campaigning congressman. What's going on? She wants to know. And I tell her I'm fucked if I know, but that it's bad. She doesn't pass comment on Marmalade, staring down at her murderously, and I don't mention Honey. It's all going away, she tells me. They're taking everything. Why? Utterly distraught, and that sounds like she's become a poet in extremis, a real fancy way of describing the situation. Except, a few words on, I realize she means her library of goddamn South American soap episodes. Her headspace is packed jam full of cheap melodrama, and it's all getting deleted, show by show. That's what's got her in a state. Indra, listen to me. But what am I going to say? That it's worse? That first they came for the soap operas, and I didn't say anything because I don't really like soap operas? Indra, listen, and still, here's me with nothing to actually tell her. Honey, do something. Help her. Stop it. Because there's only one reason why they'd be stripping out her library. It's 'cause they need the space. I'm trying, Honey says. I'm not sure what's... Oh, wait. Inja's face has gone weird, like all the Indra is being yanked from it, pulled deep inside. I see the corners of a mouth stretch. Honey, they're collaring her. They're doing it right now. Stop them, please, honey. I can hear my own voice shake. It's not a collar, Honey tells me. You don't need to shift that much data just to fit a collar. It's... My whole body jerks. Honey in the driver's seat for just a second, her reaction so great that it needs some kind of response beyond the virtual. "The fucker," she says. This last is so unexpected, I almost fall over. "Whoa, what?" The next stage of distributed intelligence, the very damn thing he was campaigning against. Not because he was against it, because he didn't want the competition. And Honey is absolutely furious, in her kind of still polite way. And Indra is beaming at me, that same goddamn look as everyone else. Her hand almost knifes me under the ribs. She sticks it out so hard. I take it, feel her clench, her macho man ball buster handshake. But the fingers moving like it's a fraternity thing, a secret handshake inside the handshake. And of course, I got no countersign to give her, so she goes still for a second and takes a step back. Her smile goes away, but no Indra bobs to the surface to replace it. "We should move," I suggest. Indra's backing off, and the lack of smile is catching like a disease. Anyone she comes within a meter of is suddenly looking very cross indeed, and at Marmalade and me. The bear lets out a low growl, and they're all just humans, no bioforms here at all, and she's a big bear, so if it comes to fisticuffs, things are going to get nasty for everyone except her. "Honey," I ask, "you got your goddamn analysis?" I know what's going on. I can't quite believe the chutzpah of it, but I see it. I'm trying to work out what we can do about it, Honey tells me. "Just let me work, if you would." "Honey, we ain't got time for you to write a thesis," I tell her. And everyone is looking at us now, all just the same way, like one person staring out of all those eyes. Then the cavalry arrives. Only it's not our cavalry, so it just makes everything worse. Some bioforms come to see what the problem is, rounding the curve of the corridor and barging through the people there. Only it's Rufus and two of his posse, a mottled dragon form called Smog, and our old friend Fat Cat Albedo, who's still limping and bandaged up where Murder tore her a new one a while back. They've got guns, and they look rattled as hell by what's been going on. But all that changes when their gaze passes over the top of all those heads and sees Marmalade and sees me. And I am very obviously the one single lone and only human who is not acting like everyone else. And in Rufus's big book of law enforcement, which is large print and only has a handful of pages, that makes me chief suspect for the crime of the century. Marmalade is spoiling for a fight, but she is also short on guns and outnumbered, and Rufus can probably take on a bear solo, best of three. "Move," I decide, and then I'm just going, hoping with every bounding leap that Honey won't take my legs off me and faceplant me into the concrete of the floor. Marmalade's right behind me, and then she's right in front of me, down on all fours and just shunting through the crowd that was creeping up behind us, so that we're clear of them and running back to our hidey hole in moments. And I risk a look back as we go, and I see an interesting thing. 'Cause that big mob of no longer grinning grinners aren't clearing to let Rufus through. He's having to wade, to push and elbow, so he doesn't catch up with us and we lose him for now. He's on our trail, but he's not part of whatever's going on with everyone else. We end up in some other hole that looks mostly like a socket for some big air pump that never got installed, because Sugar was apparently super paranoid about needing places to hide up in. And obviously Sugar knows where this place is, and Sugar ain't necessarily our friend now. I don't reckon we've got much time to catch our breath. And catching my breath is becoming a problem. I'm real anxious. And some of that is because what's going on outside is real anxious-making. I mean, let's face it, Hell City is a goddamn unnatural place. It takes a lot of looking after to make sure it all keeps working, What with the dust and the experimental tech and the goddamn being on Mars of it all. And the advantage we always had is that a blown seal, a misfiring airlock, a broken pump, they're not going to kill us like they'd have killed us before the biomods. We don't drop dead the moment the oxygen content drops or when the temperature plunges to way below zero. We're Martians, as native as anything's ever been to this godforsaken planet. But still, we need food, we need water. Enough breaks down there, we are all still fucked, is what I'm saying. I don't know yet if what's going on out there, all this collaring, is going to leave room for someone to keep the maintenance rotor going. So anxious, sure, hyperventilating, heart racing, feelings of nausea, of despair, all that. Except, it's not just based on current affairs, because I didn't score anything from Fergal Muldoon, after all. And now, I go in my pocket for my last hit of stringer, and the goddamn cheap blister has burst, and the pill is who knows where. I need to go for a walk, I say, but I'm already thinking ahead, or trying to, and there's a whole load of fun scenarios I can picture where this dealer or that dealer greets me with a grin and a handshake in just the wrong way. Except, say, you protecting Marmalade from handshake fever, honey? I'm not, no, she says, sounding preoccupied. There's no need. She's not a target. Why so? Well, you must know that the non-human bioforms don't have your headspace mods. The brain tree setup is only in humaniform models. I mean, only in the human crew. There simply isn't virtual space in Marmalade's head for the necessary download. You wouldn't fit me into her head. I wonder if she'd rather be in there, able to borrow a body more like the one she once owned. That's true for all the bioforms, I ask, because as far as I'm concerned, it's not non-human bioforms, because I am not a bioform. I'm just modded. It's not the same.
I would imagine so. I did remark on the remarkable over-engineering of your headwear at the start of our acquaintance, Jimmy. And I suppose now we know why. Because the non-human crew were engineered by other contractors.
Goddamn marvelous, I decide. And then I'm off, and sending a signal to Stanky Greer that I want to score, and I bet he's short of other customers right now. Greer isn't my favorite dealer by any means, but he's a weasel, and weasels aren't going to be doing that idiot grin anytime soon. Honey doesn't catch on until I'm well out of there and heading by the quietest ways possible over to the Mustelid digs where Greer and his fellows live. I assume most of them will be out on sight, but when I arrive, every nook has a dark, pointy face poking out of it, warily, staring at me. Not the nicest thing to walk into a den of weasels and find you're the sole human there, center of attention. They're twitchy as I am, and with good reason. From their point of view, all the humans have gone crazy, and they don't have the context I have. Not that I feel my superior state of knowledge has brought me any goddamn happiness. Hey, Greer, man. And I almost try to shake his hand, just instinctively. Except that sort of thing can get misinterpreted real fast in today's changing times. So I hang back. Greer, I need you to set me up. Stanky Greer is one of the smaller weasels, bit like the dragons or all sorts of reptiles. The weasels are part wolverine, part badger, part ferret, all bundled together. Some of them are bigger than me. But Greer is thin and snaky and short-limbed, and he doesn't stand on two legs as much as sit on his haunches. He's wearing overalls cut for his frame and a hazard vest with about 1 million pockets over that, and it's the contents of those pockets I'm most interested in.
Jimmy, Honey tells me, but then Greer is actually hugging me, or at least hugging my legs.
What the fuck, man? I ask him. But he's talking right over me.
Timmy, it's actually you, Jimmy, my man.
His voice is high, lisping,
formed more with his animal lips than most bioforms.
"Does this mean it's over? You're back to normal?"
"It was never not normal," I tell him. "It didn't get me. Everyone else is still fucked, man. Listen, set me up, will you? I cannot handle this right now. Not straight."
"Jimmy, I know, I know."
And I reckon he's probably been taking his own merchandise. And I do not blame him one bit.
"Here you go."
And he's fumbling out a whole fistful of strips, enough to keep me for a month, practically forcing the stuff on me.
"Jimmy, you're all right by me. I always liked you, Jimmy. Jimmy, you're a real stand-up human guy."
"Jesus." And he's not even asked for script. And I take it. Take a pill there and then. I kneel down and hug the little bastard back. And we kind of cling together, dealer and dealt, at this evidence of one damn thing working like it's supposed to. And I sit there with him, among the weasels, and wait for everything to feel a whole lot better. Except I don't feel the calming, purposeful rush of the stringer. I feel damn all, in fact, except unhappy.
"Greer, what is this shit?" I demand. "You ripping me off now?"
Except he hasn't charged me for it, in which case it's the most lame-ass con in narcotics history.
"What do you mean, Jimmy, man?"
he asks. No sense of any overplayed innocence, either. And don't believe the stories weasels tend to be rotten liars.
"That's my best. I cooked that myself. Cordon fucking bleu, Jimmy."
"Greer, you..." I feel like crying, except my eyes don't work that way. And then Honey says,
"Jimmy..."
again, with a certain slant and weight to the name. And I go sub voce and say, "What did you do?"
"I made an executive decision," she says in my head.
"Care to explain just what the fuck?"
"You were suffering from withdrawal symptoms that were starting to impact on your neural pathways. As I'm at least partially reliant on those, I decided it would be easiest to block them. I turned off your withdrawal, Jimmy, which meant turning off the pathways by which the drug affects your brain."
"Honey, I feel like shit."
"I think that's just life, Jimmy."
"I know it's just life." I cannot quite get into words just how pissed I feel right now. "That's what life's like. That's why I need the drug to affect my brain. Because I'm on fucking Mars, and it's dark all day and all year, and it's dusty, and they did 100 fucking invasive things to my head and my body so I can even be here and not just drop dead. And when they do that to you, when they do all that to you and put you on this goddamn fucking planet, then sometimes, just sometimes, you need a little something extra to get your goddamn mind at ease. Do you get me?" I realized that most of that got said at something more than sub-voke because all the weasels are watching me like I've gone crazy, which, given all the other humans they've seen have actually gone crazy, is a very real problem for them.
"Jimmy, man,"
Greer says, putting some distance between us.
"You okay there? Maybe you should get going now."
"Maybe I should," I agree, disgusted with drugs that don't work and interfering bears.
"No, wait," Honey tells me. "I need to speak to them."
"Go find your own mouth to do it with," I tell her, and start off. But Honey's playing hardball.
"Tell them what I want, or I'll do it again," she says. "Jimmy, big things are going on, and I am not going to be crippled by your fits of pique."
I don't even know what pique is, but the threat's real enough, so I hear what Honey has to say and then stop in the doorway of the weasel dorm to speak to Greer and pals. "Look, there's something big going on. You spotted that. Something sent from Earth is fucking with us humans. I'm trying to fix it." Easier to say I than this dead bear I got in my head. "But keep an open channel, Greer man. Keep an ear ready, because I might need help." Greer's body language says that helping me is way down his bucket list, but he wants me gone,
so he's all nods and smiles if it'll get me out of the door.